Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band on Hollywood Nights for Peter to start the hour, and James Dean Bradfield from his new solo album, that's The Boy from the Plantation. That's 60 minutes past eight, and they make a horrible screeching noise, says Claire.
Well, yes.
Parakeets. I quite like them, actually. Now, some people do anything for money. A Slovenian woman's been found guilty of deliberately sawing off her own hand as part of an insurance scam.
Oh.
Of course, in Ljubljana, found that Julia Adelsic, who's 22, had taken out five insurance policies in the year before her injury. She claimed it happened as she cut branches from a tree. She stood to gain more than €1 million in payouts. She's now facing 2 years in prison while her boyfriend has been given a three-year sentence. She and a number of her relatives were arrested in 2019 after she arrived in hospital with her hand cut off above the wrist. The court found that she and her boyfriend had intentionally left the severed hand behind rather than bringing it with them to ensure the disability was permanent. But authorities recovered it in time to sew it back on. A prosecutor said the woman's boyfriend had also made internet searches about artificial hands. Prosecutors said this was proof the injury was intentional. Her boyfriend's father was also given a one-year suspended sentence, and she denied intentionally cutting off her own hand. Had the fraudulent claim been successful, the couple would have received more than €500,000 as a lump sum, with the rest paid in monthly instalments.
Well, on the subject of money, have you seen the guy that won Who Wants to Be a Millionaire for the first time
yes.
in 14 years? He's gone back to work today.
Has he?
Yes.
Okay.
History and politics teacher. He said he's going back to work. He managed to hide his incredible win from his own daughter.
Did you do the questions?
No, I didn't. Did you?
Because there's only one I didn't know.
Really?
Yeah, the sperm whale one.
So how much was that at? How much would you have backed out?
I think that was about 250,000. I can't remember.
Oh,
but...
not to be stopped.
Well, no, because I wouldn't have had to use my lifelines if I got that far, because I knew the answers to all the earlier questions.
Oh, yeah, but have you got a friend to phone?
We could do 50-50 or phone a friend, couldn't
we? We could do, yes.
Yeah. But I even knew the Blackbeard one, which won him the jackpot.
Well done. Yeah,
I remember doing it in history at school. Okay, on you go.
Ready? Question number one.
Ready as I'll ever be.
On this day in 1974, Eric Clapton scored a US number one with which Bob Marley song?
I Shot the Sheriff.
Correct. Question number two. The following lyrics are from which B-52 song?
Oh, no.
I Got Me a Car, It's As Big as a Whale.
It's About to Set Sail. Love Shack.
Well done. And it's John Power's birthday today. He's born on this day in 1967. He is, of course, a singer-songwriter with which group that had a 1990 UK number 13 single? Do you know the name of the group or the name of the song?
What was the song called?
If I tell you the name of the song, you're going to know it. There She Goes.
The Lars.
Yes.
It was a one-hit wonder, really, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, but it's his birthday today. Singer-songwriter, John Power. Well, I'd give you that, but I did give it away.
Well, I'd never heard of John Power, and as I said, the Lars were a bit, hardly sort of an international best-selling act, are they? Although this is rather a good record.
It certainly is.
Riviera Radio. Business.
Morning.
Good morning.
How are we today?
Very well, actually. Listen, I had an amazing weekend.
Did you?
My parents-in-law very kindly hired the Mr. Men house, which is a beautiful house from the founder of the Mr. Men, Roger Hargreaves, in Kent. And it was absolutely... Listen, it had the ingredients of just a wonderful weekend. Sun was shining, drinks were flowing, barbecue was sizzling, lovely heated swimming pool, jacuzzi there, kids were happy. Most importantly, it was, I guess, a chance for the grandparents to see their extended family before the rule of six comes in, which may be in place all the way until Christmas, of course. So we had a beautiful weekend, really one of the best I've had in such a long time.
Oh, well, that's nice to hear. Mm. And which particular football team are you supporting this season?
High-spending Chelsea, I think, is going to
really?
Be top of my list. But let's see how they play tonight.
Is little Henry happy about that?
He's not a massive football fan, to be honest with you. There's quite a lot of Chelsea players, children at his school, in his class and so forth. So I guess they'll be supporting Chelsea, so he'll probably go along with them.
OK, onto the markets. A bumpy ride last week, wasn't it?
Certainly a volatile week for equity markets as the declines in technology shares continued after that five-month rally came to somewhat of a dramatic halt. Perhaps that's pushing it a little bit too far. But the Nasdaq registered its worst week since March, now 11% lower than that September the 2nd record. Apple has been quite interesting. Apple shares have plunged 16% from its 10-day-old high. So a significant movement there, although should be seen in the context of the extraordinary gains that we've seen over the course of the past few months. Beyond tech, tech global stocks notched up the first back-to-back weekly declines since the start of the pandemic. Remember, that's the rally that added $7 trillion to US equity values. No doubt investors are nervous once again, looking at the path of the pandemic. How disruptive is that going to be to future economic activity? We've heard from the World Health Organization in the last couple of hours saying yesterday was a record one-day increase in infections. In fact, 308,000 people were infected over a 24-hour period, led by India, the US and Brazil. So markets will be watching those numbers very carefully, although we should remember it's against the backdrop of medical gains that are happening at an unprecedented rate as the race to find a vaccine continues, and you've got this overwhelming support from policymakers, and that's trying to help balance out some of that sentiment. If you look at the opening calls on the European bourses, actually positive this morning. Currently calling FTSE up 18 points. DAX over in Frankfurt up 72 points. CAC in Paris up 33 points.
Yes, Christine Lagarde was laying down the gauntlet over the weekend, saying that Eurozone governments must keep spending heavily to keep unemployment down and bolster economic confidence.
Yeah, they have to. Unemployment in the Eurozone, less volatile, of course, than you see in the United States, but has been rising. I think, if memory serves me correctly, it's gone from 7.2% to 7.8%, and we think it will head to just under 10% by the end of this year. Some governments have been extending their furlough programs. Germany's probably the classic example of that, but other ones are starting to unwind, and that's going to be, I think, reflected in terms of the labour market. The real step change, of course, for the Eurozone was the development of the European Recovery Fund, the mutualization of debt. That reduces some of the fragmentation risks, I think, that you see within the Eurozone. But actually, that fiscal support is absolutely vital at the moment. Debt levels across Europe, of course, have been rising. That is a concern, but this is no time for policymakers to back down. They need to double down on that fiscal response. They need to boost the growth trajectory, and that's how they're going to overcome the long-term scarring of the pandemic and start to reduce some of those debt levels with growth.
Yeah, but soaring levels of debt as well. And we heard over the weekend the US budget deficit had soared to a record high of more than $3 trillion.
Yep, there's no doubt about that. Debt deficits have been absolutely skyrocketing. No real surprise given the scale of the fiscal response that we've been seeing. That's been absolutely unavoidable. The good news is, at least certainly in the short term, markets aren't too concerned about the servicing of that debt. You've got bond yields down at historically low levels, and in many cases, of course, in negative levels. And that, of course, is means servicing the debt is obviously certainly achievable, and helped, of course, by central banks who continue to be very accommodative through their asset purchase programs.
Okay, big deal in the tech sector going through.
Yes, US graphic chip specialist NVIDIA is paying $40 billion to acquire ARM from SoftBank. ARM, as we know, has led the way in the design of computer chips, licensing its technology to customers such as Intel, Qualcomm, and Samsung Electronics. 180 billion chips have been sold based on its technology. Remember, it's using everything from smartphones all the way through to toasters. NVIDIA said it would retain ARM's UK headquarters, which exempts it from many US export control laws. The move will shake up the global chip industry. There will be some concerns, particularly from customers, particularly in the likes of Asia, China, South Korea have already outlined, or certainly some of the companies there have been outlining concerns and criticizing part of this deal and what it would mean in terms of concentration of power. It certainly looks like it has the go-ahead to continue.
Yeah, and we just get these bigger, massive tech companies developing. I mean, you know, Dominic Cummings wants to create a $1 trillion tech company in the UK, doesn't he?
Well, it may want to, and listen, technology is the key. And part of the reason, actually, why US markets, of course, have consistently outperformed the European markets for a prolonged period of time is the development of technology companies they have there compared to the limited focus that you have in terms of UK and European markets.
And do you get on the Peloton exercise bike at all?
Listen, I wouldn't mind one, to be. They're very expensive. I wouldn't mind trying one, to be honest with you. I know quite a lot of people, some of the dads at the schools are into this, and it seems a little bit expensive so far for me.
But you can afford it.
Oh, come on.
You had a good year, didn't you?
It's not looking that good. Peloton said that they would cut, actually, the price of its bikes and screens to an average. But it still comes down at $1,900 for the systems. But they did say that would make it more accessible. But certainly doing very well as the lockdown closed gyms. Fitness industry embracing a technological solution. Leading that charge has been Peloton, offering remote workout classes The firm's global membership hit 3.1 million at the end of June. It's more than doubled the year earlier. Revenue, of course, has been rising dramatically as well. Revenue surged 172% year on year, came in at $607 million. Really positive outlook statement coming through from them. So they expect the number of subscribers to exceed 2 million over the next 12 months. Revenue in the next financial year, they said, will be at least $3.5 billion. Shares were up on Friday on the back of the announcement there. And they say people are using it. Perhaps unlike gyms, people are really using it. Average 24 sessions per month. Per subscriber, quite incredible.
I don't like exercise bikes.
No?
No,
you
get a sore bum.
These are different ones though, aren't they? They're sort of cooler looking. Maybe you have the same issues, but these look different from what you're used to in the traditional exercise.
The saddles are so uncomfortable.
Okay, well isn't that the same for a normal bike?
Well, you're gonna need a padded saddle when you get to my age.
Well, you know, take some creams and get on with it.
Creams?
Well, you know, help yourself out.
Right, and another week of fraught negotiations on Brexit coming up. I mean, so we're all thinking, isn't it?
I hope we get through this interview without that. Yes, and it's the second reading of the Internal Markets Bill taking place today, and that's setting the backdrop for what is going to be somewhat of a battle, it has to be said, not only between the government and opposition partners, but a number of members of the government party, the Conservative Party, of course, coming out and saying that this is putting the UK in a very difficult position, that it's undermining the strength of the UK because they're not abiding by international law, and therefore the consequence of that means who can trust us in the future?
The Vienna Convention.
We go out and do a deal. Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be somewhat of a bitter political backdrop during the course of this week, which will muddy the waters of Brexit and means we're unlikely to get closer to that deal being agreed.
Do you think there's a big enough Conservative rebellion to see that bill defeated?
Probably not. Not as far as that. Some of the amendments it looks like could go through and some changes coming through. I mean, they've got such a healthy majority in terms of the UK Parliament. You'd really need to turn a lot of those MPs around in order to make that happen. But there is support for individual amendments which could dramatically change the way in which the bill looks.
It's not going to get an easy ride in the House of Lords either, is it?
No, we've heard from some prominent members in the House of Lords over the course of the past few days believing this is not the way in which the UK should be operating. It's not the best way to build trust with international partners. And again, they will try to do what they can to influence the way in which the bill looks as it goes through those individual stages.
Well, this whole thing about global Britain and striking trade deals, I see a trade deal was agreed in the court in principle.
Did a very big one with Japan, very big one with
Japan. $1.5 billion over 15 years compared to $498 billion with the European Union.
Very exciting.
Come on.
Very exciting. No, listen, I think it's, 3% of UK exports go to Japan? Go on.
It'll amount to 0.07% of GDP over 15 years.
Okay, so it's a very low amount. Listen, we've said for many times, and there's no getting away from it, Europe is and will continue to be the UK's largest trading partner. As I said before, 43% of UK exports went into the European Union back in 2019. We need an agreement. We need this to work. And remember, Europe also needs the UK. So there's that's hope is that, of course, that self-interest on both sides will eventually start to shine through.
That's a very optimistic point of view.
Well, listen, it comes down to economic being pragmatic over the economic arguments. I've nearly got that wrong. Economic, being pragmatic over some of these economic views as opposed to thinking about sovereignty and politics and all these things.
Pragmatism over dogmatism.
Oh, that's how I should have said it. And that is why you earn the big bucks. That is why you earn the right to sit at that mic.
Foreign exchanges standing
absolutely
up, actually.
Brilliant. Pound against the dollar. Oh, you're back. You need to. Pound against the dollar coming in at 128. Euro dollar coming in at 118. Going to get 1 euro 8 cents for your British pound this morning.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day, sir.
Speak to you in the morning. Hank Potson Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online. This is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Lyser has the top stories across the Riviera.
The body of a 60-year-old woman has been found in the sea near Cap d'Antibes. Emergency services discovered the body about 50 metres from the shore at around 7:45 on Sunday morning. Police believe it to be an accidental drowning, as the woman was at the time wearing a swimsuit and her belongings were later discovered on the beach. Police have opened an investigation and appealed for any witnesses to come forward. A cyclist has died in the city centre of Saint-Pantelon in the Luberon after a fatal fall. The incident occurred at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. The 60-year-old man was at the time cycling with a group of cyclists when he fell while riding over a speed bump. Emergency services were unable to save the victim, who was reportedly not wearing a helmet at the time of the accident. The famous second wave of the coronavirus pandemic has become a reality on Sunday, September the 13th, with Austria officially using the term, and in Israel, a new national lockdown of at least 3 weeks has been announced. In France, a symbolic milestone of 10,000 new cases in 24 hours was recorded on Saturday. That's a record since the launch of large-scale testing. In the region, the president of the Provence-Alpes Côte d'Azur has requested a ban on access to beaches and parks from 8 p.m, as well as a ban on wedding parties and to make the flu vaccine compulsory for people over 65 and nursing staff. Meanwhile, a group of six leading French doctors and professors have called for an end to private get-togethers, echoing the government's appeal for more responsible behaviour. 42 of France's 94 departments are now classified as red zones. There are critical zones around Marseille, Bordeaux, and in the French overseas territory of Guadeloupe. Yellow vest protesters have returned to roundabouts in the region in protest against social inequalities. On Saturday, about 30 yellow vest protesters gathered at the motorway exit roundabout in La Ciotta, with gatherings also taking place in La Seine-sur-Mer, Cuers, Toulon and Antibes. In Nice, despite not being authorised by the local council, 300 yellow vest protesters rallied at the Place de la Libération on Saturday afternoon. The Crossing Calvi Monaco Water Bike Challenge, which raises money for the Princess Charlene of Monaco Foundation, arrived on Sunday morning at 11:31 at the Monaco Yacht Club here in the Principality. The Serenity team, led by Her Serene Highness Princess Charlene, won the challenge after 22 hours and 33 minutes. The Notorious team, led by Gareth Whitstock, Secretary General of the Foundation, crossed the finishing line 14 minutes later. Riviera Radio spoke to Gareth as he arrived at the Yacht Club. I asked him how it went.
Very, very tough, but we accomplished it. Obviously, this was for a good cause, for the foundation, and we had a donation page as well, so we've raised quite a substantial amount of money for our current programs and for future programs. Very intense, but we had four on a team, great guys. I've made new friends now, so it was really good.
What were the conditions like?
The beginning, yeah, it was difficult, actually. We had headwind, swells were pretty big. But we fought that, and then obviously the wind started coming down, going into the evening, and then we just made it back to the yacht club. It worked out perfectly.
Congratulations, well done. The Unprecedented Sporting Challenge promotes the programmes of the Princess Charlene of Monaco Foundation, Learn to Swim and Water Safety, raising awareness around the world. Since the creation of the foundation in 2012, more than 730,000 people, particularly children, have benefited from these programmes in 34 countries. In national news, Météo France has warned of a wave of heat which is expected to sweep across France over the next 3 days. While minimum temperatures will range from 7 to 16 degrees over the northern half of the country and 14 to 22 in the south, maximums are expected to increase, in particular in the north and northwest, varying between 30 and 38 degrees. Finally, France has hosted its first World Naked Bike Ride in the town of Rennes in Brittany. The World Naked Bike Ride is already popular in Belgium, Spain, Germany and the United States. And on Saturday, it was the town of Rennes in northwestern France which allowed cyclists, some wearing just a watch or a hat, to complete a 15-kilometre circuit through its streets and parks.
Riviera Radio, sports news.
Well, they all had their clothes on in the Tour de France yesterday, and Tadej Pogačar won stage 15 of the race on Sunday as fellow Slovenian Primoz Roglic retained the yellow jersey. Pogačar beat Roglic in the sprint, finished the line, and is now 40 seconds behind the race leader. Egan Bernal dropped out of contention after cracking on the final climb to the Grand Colombier and has now fallen from overall second to 13th. The two Slovenians look like they've pretty much sewn up this year's Tour, with Roglic holding a 40-second advantage over Pogačar. Then there's a big gap to Rigoberto Urán in third, who's 1 minute at 34 seconds behind the leader. Today is a rest day. Tennis: Dominic Thiem has won the US Open after coming from two sets down to beat Alexander Zverev to claim his maiden Grand Slam. The Austrian looked down and out as he lost the first two sets 2-6, 4-6, but he made a stunning comeback to take the final three sets 6-4, 6-3, 7-6 to become the first man to come from two sets down to win the US Open for 76 years. Formula One: Lewis Hamilton won the Tuscan Grand Prix on Sunday in an incident-strewn race which was punctuated by two red flags. At the third start, Hamilton streaks away from Valtteri Bottas and Daniel Ricciardo to take the chequered flag ahead of Bottas and Alex Albon in the Red Bull. The original start only lasted three laps because of a pile-up involving Kimi Raikkonen, Romain Grosjean and Pierre Gasly, and the race was halted twice more following another pile-up and then a crash involving Lance Stroll in the Racing Point. Hamilton leads the Drivers' Championship on 190 points from Mercedes teammate Bottas on 135. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull is in third on 110. Football: there were two games in the English Premier League on Sunday. Here are the details from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello, I'm Paul Serres at the BBC Sports Centre. Everton's new signings made impressive debuts to help them to the club's first win over Tottenham since 2012. Former Real Madrid player James Rodriguez, Brazil's Alan and midfielder Abdoulaye Doucouré all starred for Everton, but it was striker Dominic Calvert-Lewin who grabbed the only goal of the match.
When you get the 3 points and score and contribute, it's a good day at the office, so I'm happy with my performance today. A lot more to come, you know, fitness still to come. And we've not long been playing together as the new signings have come in, so there's more to come.
Toffees boss Carlo Ancelotti said after the game that Everton supporters are right to be excited about the season ahead.
They have to be excited because I think the supporters of Everton suffered from a long time, and so when we have a good result, they have to show their happiness.
It was a harsh return to the Premier League for newly promoted West Bromwich Albion after they were comfortably beaten 3-0 by Leicester City. Last season's Premier League top scorer Jamie Vardy converted two penalties, with the opening goal scored by debutant Timothy Castan. The Belgium defender joined from Atalanta and manager Brendan Rodgers was delighted with his contribution.
He's a player that fits the profile of how I want to work. You know, he's very fast, he's non-stop running. He gets forward, he wants to score goals as a fullback, but importantly, he also can defend. He's aggressive, he's got composure, and he's a brilliant signing for us. 24, Belgian international, coming to the Premier League, and he'll prove, I think, to be a really, really good asset for us. So, great debut for him, and really pleased.
And Wolves manager Nuno Espirito Santo has signed a new three-year contract with the club. The Portuguese has taken Wolves from mid-table in the Championship to their first European quarter-final in almost 50 years in the three seasons he has been in charge. And for more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Two games tonight: Sheffield United play Wolves and Brighton host Chelsea. Absolute rubbish start to my fantasy football league this year.
Why? What happened?
I didn't get a single point. I picked Fulham to beat Arsenal stupidly, and then I picked Southampton to beat Crystal Palace, and they lost as well. So, nul point.
Well, watch out for Wolves this evening.
Why?
I think they can do it.
What,
I think
the
they're going to be one of the favourites this year round.
I don't think so.
I think so. You wait.
Right, OK, who's going to finish in the top four then?
Wolves, Leicester, Aston Villa and Liverpool.
Aston Villa?
Yes.
In the top four?
Yes.
You have completely gone mad, haven't you?
You wait.
All due apologies to Aston Villa fans, but I can't see that happening at all. But no Manchester City?
No.
No Chelsea?
No.
No Spurs? No Arsenal?
No.
Right, OK.
It turned on its head this
Shall
time
I tell
around.
You, just give you my predictions?
Go on then.
Liverpool?
Yeah.
Chelsea, Manchester City, Arsenal.
Okay.
I think that'll be the top four. Well, what about Manchester United? I haven't even mentioned them yet.
Yeah.
Mm. Cricket England have squared the one-day series against Australia as the tourist manager's spectacular collapse when they appeared to be cruising to victory. England batted first and were pegged to 231 for 9 from their 50 overs, with the innings saved by a stand between Adil Rashid and Tom Curran. Australia were in complete control on 142 for 4 in their reply, before Chris Wokes and Jofra Archer induced a collapse of 4 wickets for just 3 runs in 21 balls. The tourists were bowled out for 207 to hand England a 24-run victory, levelling the series with 1 to play, and that's happening on Wednesday. Finally, rugby union. There were five games in the Gallagher Premiership in England on Sunday. Wasps beat Bristol 59-35. Leicester beat Northampton 28-24. Worcester were 40-25 winners at London Irish. Bath were 37-22 winners at Sale. And Saracens ended Exeter's winning run with a 40-17 win at the Allianz Park.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Oyster, the world's finest blue water sailing yachts. Oyster Yachts. Beyond expectation.
For coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Almaracim and the Var, the general situation is high pressure, 1,023 millibars over the region. Winds are variable, force 1 to 3. The sea is calm, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, 1,023 millibars at the Alec for Tuesday. Clear skies, force 1 to 3, variable winds, calm seas and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are variable, force 1 to 3. The sea is calm, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,022 millibars at the Alec for Tuesday, clear skies, force 1 to 3 variable winds, calm seas and good visibility.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Oyster, the world's finest blue water sailing yachts. Oyster Yachts, beyond expectation.
Riviera Radio, weather.
Not so much an Indian summer, it's just an extension of the summer at the moment. Clear skies, light to moderate southeasterly winds, temperatures 28 to 30 degrees this afternoon. Overnight lows 23 degrees on the coast. It's too hot, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah. 20 degrees inland with clear skies. Tuesday and Wednesday, clear skies, highs of 28 to 30 degrees.
I was looking forward to getting a bit cooler.
Yeah.
I even got my tweed jacket out.
Did you?
I had to put it away again. Yeah. I thought on Friday when it was raining and it went a bit cooler, I thought, oh.
Yes, I don't mind it being hot during the day, but just like it's cooled down a bit at night. 17 would be nice, wouldn't it, overnight?
Certainly would.
Finally.
This is one for Jan, the white van man. A white van man is less likely to lose his cool behind the wheel than top earners like surgeons and chief executives.
What?
According to new research, some 17% of higher managerial staff admitted having a verbal or physical fight with someone in the car, compared to 7% of skilled manual workers, such as electricians and carpenters. The survey of 1,000 UK motorists showed that 21% have had a physical or verbal fight while driving. Female drivers showed slightly cooler heads, with 19% admitting to losing it behind the wheel, as opposed to 23% of men. Meanwhile, male motorists are more likely to get distracted by a good-looking passerby while driving, with 21% of men admitting to checking out someone who is hot compared to 6% of women. And women are marginally more likely to use their phones behind the wheel, with 17% confessing to the crime compared to 16% of men.
Lies, damned lies and statistics.
Yeah, and Londoners are apparently the angriest of motorists.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Especially taxi drivers.
And the calmest?
The calmest what?
Calmest motorists.
What, in the UK?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Norwich.
Scotland.
Scotland?
Yeah, followed really? By Northern Ireland.
Mm. They have cars in Scotland now, do they?
Oh, stop it.